Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hardwood Knox podcast. I am Dan Favalli, your second favorite co-host around these parts. Today, we're going to continue with our off-season outlook previews. Moving on to the Minnesota Timberwolves, I have brought on Derek James, who covers the T-Wolves for Score North and Canis Hoopus. He also covers the Minnesota Lynx for High Post Hoops. I'm a Patreon subscriber to them. You should definitely consider doing that as well and checking out their work and his work over there. He's one of the best Timberwolves mind out there. So be sure to follow him on Twitter as well at Derek James NBA. Before we get started though, our usual housekeeping notes, I just want to remind, implore, beg, continue pleading with everyone, rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. You're going to be able to catch us wherever else you consume your podcast, but going onto iTunes, searching Hardwood Knox, throwing us that five-star rating, writing a review, definitely subscribing if you haven't already. That's the best way to help us right now. We're still trying to build up this community. We love seeing those numbers go up. We love seeing any comments and reviews that are written. Andy and I are always scouring those, so please, if you haven't done any of that, do so at your convenience, earliest, if preferable. And if you've done all that already, we encourage you to refer us to someone. Shout us out on Twitter. Steal people's phones and subscribe them to the Hardwood Knox podcast. They will love you forever and ever for doing so. As always, also, please remember to follow us on Twitter. You can find me at Dan Favalli, F-A-V-A-L-E. Andy can be found at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. And Blue Wire Podcasts, our sponsor, they have a ton of great other content, especially in the NBA, but also across all different kinds of sports. Check them out if you haven't done so already. They are at Blue Wire Pods. With all of that out of the way, we are ready to go and talk to Derek James. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you once more without my co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. But as we keep our off-season team-by-team deep dives going, I am very excited to once again be joined by Derek James, who covers the Minnesota Timberwolves for Score North and Canis Hoopus. He also covers the Minnesota Lynx for High Post Hoops. You should subscribe to them if you haven't already. I am a proud Patreon subscriber of them, so make sure you hit that up. If you're not following Derek already, I would recommend remedying that immediately. He can be found at Derek James NBA. I always love a handle that I don't have to spell out. So thank you for making that easy on me. We're going to obviously be talking
about... Well, you can thank my parents for that one. I had no control of the spelling of my name.
We're obviously going to be talking Timberwolves today. So hopefully everyone's ready to just get some deep cut information on them. But before we really get into it, we have to ask, because I'm sure everyone wants to know, Derek, how have you been?
Things have been good. It's just, you know, watching, you know, as much playoffs as you can this time of year. And especially, you know, once again, no Timberwolves in it, but, you know, I enjoyed it last year for as long as I could have had it.
Their season was eventful, I think you could say. Also eventful was the couple hours before we were scheduled to record this. Minnesota hired a president of basketball operations. Woj says it's, and I hope I'm not butchering his pronunciation, but Gerson Rosas, who comes from the Houston Rockets, and it seemed like Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle, I know, quote, tweeted your response to him, and he just described Gerson Rosas, again, if I'm butchering the pronunciation, I'm sorry, as just sort of a perfect balance hire, and I can't claim to know anything about him. I think these hires come out and a lot of people, like uninformed people, might just say, oh, this looks good. But it was to see Jonathan Fagan back it up with such an in-depth description. I'm wondering what your, you know, you said this name was bandied about for a couple weeks. So I'm wondering what you thought of this hire and maybe what it says about what direction the Timberwolves are leaning towards going in moving forward?
Well, so I think, you know, you see like a lot of the things that Jonathan Fagan said, and for people who don't have the tweet, talks about, you know, just the stability and experience and, you know, how, you know, the Rockets front office worked and how that all came together. And, you know, he has a good blend of, you know, scouting and analytics, but, you know, isn't like put off like traditional basketball measurements for whatever that's worth. But I think you look at like what the Rockets have had, you know, around Daryl Morey and what he's built there and just how much stability they've had. That's something that the Timberwolves desperately need. And so the fact that, you know, they look towards someone like that, but also what really stands out to me is their process, you know. So, I mean, this kind of goes back a long ways, but I mean, Kevin McHale was in charge of his team for about 15 years. And then McHale gets fired. Glenn Taylor at the time, Timberwolves owner, has no idea who to hire. So he goes to David Stern for a recommendation, even though he's been on the Glenn Taylor's been on the board of governors for 15 years, and they wind up with David Kahn. And then it winds up back to Flip Saunders, you know, after it was kind of just like, oh, well, you know, we don't really know what to do. Flip, you want to come back? And like, so there's never really a search, like even going back to Tibbs, you know, that was, you know, going to Korn Ferry, the search firm. And well, they had Tibbs as a client. So of course they're going to go, Tom Thibodeau. So it was really encouraging to see not only that they really just like looked outside of the organization, but they put together a list of like really respectable candidates, like even like Michael Winger of the Clippers, who declined an interview. You know, that was another good name. And the fact that
they were bringing these guys in to be able to keep him when he's being offered ostensibly or at least in the running for a more prominent job in Mini.
And so many other guys, they had another guy stay too, I think, that declined to join David Griffin in New Orleans, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, clearly there's something good going there too.
And Jerry West.
You see why those guys are in demand. Was it Jerry West out of someone else?
No, I'm saying Jerry West is what they have going there that I think people.
Oh,
I honestly have no idea. I'm just throwing shit at the wall and seeing if it sticks.
I don't think you say no to Jerry West.
Yeah, that's fair. First of all, the only thing I see is a coward who saw the Houston go down 2-0 and then just decided to abandon ship the day after. So, no, but again, based off what you said, what Fagan said, it definitely seems like at least the Timberwolves' heads are in the right place with this hire. And now I think it was, I'm assuming, like it seemed like it was made official at one point, but what does this sort of mean for Saunders and the, you know, the quote unquote head coaching search, if we can even say that it's that? I think everyone, it was reported, I can't remember by who, that he was returning. And I think it was rebuked by John Krasinski of The Athletic that they hadn't agreed to anything with Ryan Saunders just yet. And I'm wondering if you just have a feel for where that's going.
Well, I mean, yeah, I read John Krasinski's piece today, and it kind of sounded like the same thing, that Rosas has that relationship with Ryan Saunders. I don't know if he said from where or, you know, what exactly the extent was, but they do have that background. And so, I mean, it certainly seems like that's going to be the direction that they're going to go in. I mean, just kind of just reading the way things are going, not knowing anything myself. You know, you have that relationship now with the new president of basketball operations. You have a coach, and now oddly you're putting in the general manager somewhere in the middle of that, whoever that winds up being, whether that's Scott Layden or, you know, whomever, because clearly now you have a young coach, you know, who is open-minded analytically and the buying of the roster. Now you have this, you know, up-and-coming executive that you just hired. And, you know, so what they do with that general manager spot will be really interesting to me.
The players do seem to really like Saunders, though, from what it seemed like, just based off what was said publicly about him during the course of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, he does have, you know, he has very positive energy to him. He's definitely something people talk about, you know, like breakups, and then they wind up going after someone who's the opposite of their ex. And it's just like that with Ryan Saunders and Tom Thibodeau is, you know, everything that people make him out to be. He's a basketball, you know, machine or robot. And Ryan Saunders, you know, he's definitely, you know, passionate about the game. He's obviously been around it his whole life, but there are parts that remind you of his dad and how supportive he is of his guys, like, and things like that, how, you know, generally excited he gets about this stuff. So yeah, it's a very different approach, but it's easy to see too, you know, why, you know, he would appeal to something like that.
Now with this I think even before the Rosas hire and even before they figure out what they're doing with Saunders or their head coach Jinx search in general, I struggle to see the direction of this team. I think you look at the roster and say they're closer to wanting to compete immediately, but I'm wondering, and I think this would be the basis for their whole offseason, do you think that something resembling a reset would be on the table for them, or do you believe that even post Jimmy Butler trade, just looking at the assets they got back for him in Covington, how close Saric is to his next contract, that they're very much just full force, we're trying to get back to the playoffs ASAP?
Well, I mean, I do think that's the goal. I mean, I think Glenn Taylor wants to win. I mean, he's in his mid, maybe late 70s at this point. I think he really does want to see another consistent winner, you know, before he considers, you know, getting away from the team. But yeah, they're stuck in a really weird position after the Jimmy trade. It's almost like they sort of have almost two different timelines going. You know, there's Jeff Teague, who's going to be in his final year. There's no way he was walking away from that money. But and you mentioned the Dario Saric deal, and they don't really know what he is. And it kind of goes with Andrew Wiggins and trying to salvage, you know, something out of that contract and get some better production out of that. And looking for a guy like Rosas, who's been, you know, big with player development in Houston. I mean, he did find Daniel House and Clint Capella, you know, when not a lot of people were noticing those guys and able to turn them into viable rotation players. The Wolves really need to do that with Saric, because I watched Dario Saric and I'm like, well, there's something here. You don't know exactly what it is. And we're in, you know, year 3-4 of him. And Andrew Wiggins is, you know, Andrew Wiggins, and he's regressed each year probably for the last 3-4 years now. And that's concerning. And after a while, you wonder, you know, is there anything left to be salvaged?
Yeah, that's that. I mean, I'm going to pester you about Andrew Wiggins later, and I know we went sort of deep on him last time. But so looking through the Timberwolves' aims through that scope, now that, you know, they have the president of basketball operations in place, I think we can infer some stuff about where Ryan Saunders is going with that coaching position. What becomes their three biggest offseason priorities, or what are their three biggest offseason concerns now?
Well, I think they really do just have to focus on the draft and doing well there. I mean, up anywhere down the roster, I mean, they got to figure out what they're going to do at point guard, because I mean, Jeff Teague is clearly not going to be here forever, but Tyus Jones is a restricted free agent. So they got a lot of things to sort out there. And like we just talked about, you know, whether they're rebuilding or they're in win now, they have to decide what kind of team they are, because I think that determines what free agents you bring back. Because between expiring, you know, two-way players and player options and things like that, they have 9 or 10 guys that from the 2019 team that could not be on the 2020 roster. It all really depends on where you want to go with this team, and they need to figure that out, because they could very easily have two different timelines going here, and that's right. Not, you know, particularly helpful for any franchise.
Do you see just among that group of free agents, I look at them, and even the ones that I think stand out, you know, as most key, obviously not Bayless, but Dang played well. That was like that was interesting. You have Taj Gibson, Tyus Jones, Derrick Rose, who had right elbow surgery, and Anthony Tolliver. Are any of them, I don't look at any of them and view them as must keeps. Do you think that any of them are along those lines? Do you think most of those guys are going to end up being goners?
I would think so. I think Anthony Tolliver was kind of frustrated with his role this season. It just never seemed like he, you know, was getting the playing time that he expected. Well, mostly under Tom Thibodeau. He played a little more under Ryan Saunders, and you know, they're the former Bulls guys are the ones that I do worry about. Taj Gibson, I think, you know, if he's in a smaller role, that would be great for him. I mean, because, you know, Taj isn't a guy that wants to play 35 minutes and start 82 games. He's the kind of guy, he's happy coming off the bench for 2025 and playing 4 or 5 more years. So it really kind of depends on the role that the team needs there. But I would probably stay away from Dang and Rose for sure. You know, everyone, you know, thinks about the Derrick Rose 50-point game, and you look at it, and I wrote about this at the end of the season. You know, he really just had a strong 30 games where everything was falling. I mean, it's really just his shooting numbers from the first 30 games were such an outlier. And then, you know, he played 30.
Yeah, when Derrick Rose is hitting pull-up three-pointers and those threes off the dribble, like that's
at 50%.
That's an outlier. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not – he doesn't all of a sudden start doing that in year 11 and have that be sustainable. But then he couldn't play once they, you know, they had to play him over 30 minutes. And that's a concern too.
Interesting with Derrick Rose, over his final 18 games, while he was still in and out of the lineup, 5.7% from three, which is actually impressively terrible. Like 5.7% is hard.
And people have brought this up, and I think it's a fair point that he did have some lower body issues. And if he's obviously dealing with elbow problems, you know, that of course plays into it. But I think it also comes back to other concerns you have about Derrick Rose and his durability. And, you know, can you afford to pay this guy a bunch of money on your team? Because I think what helped him stay healthy and play well in the playoffs last year was the fact that he took 2 weeks off in Cleveland to, you know, ponder his basketball future, allegedly. And then after Utah released him, he had 2 weeks off before Tom Thibodeau picked him up. So it kind of seems like if you want Derrick Rose, you're going to have to play him 15 minutes a night and give him a couple nights off here and there to get, you know, him through a season.
And I think so, before we do these podcasts, I do solicit questions from listeners and try to tie them to the topic. And we have one from Adam Spinella, at Spinella14. Tie into the Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose decisions, even if they are decisions at all. If the Wolves pay to keep both Rose and Tyus, will they be able to use their full non-tax MLE? Or does Jones and Rose plus the 10th pick cap hold prevent them from using that? I think that's the answer is just no, that or excuse, that they wouldn't have, in my mind, the full non-tax MLE, because they're, if you carry Jones's hold, like, they're close now with Teague opting in, and so you're gonna have to pay. Rose is probably, I would think Rose, if he's healthy, gets more than the minimum, but I honestly don't know. I could see teams be like, no, we're not gonna pay him more than the minimum. But even if you paid Jones his cap hold, maybe that's high, you still just, you're way too close to the luxury tax threshold there to guarantee you'd have that full MLE. And so that's definitely reason enough to, I would think, choose between one of them, if not let both walk.
Yeah. I mean, it's what happens with Tyus is interesting. The most the Wolves can offer Rose right now is the 4 years, 36. And I don't think
please
I would
don't
go
do
to
that,
$9 million
Wolves
a year for Derrick Rose. That, I mean, you know, if someone wants to, you know, pay Derrick Rose $9 million a year for 1 or 2 years, have at it. That's probably not going to hurt you, depending on the makeup of your team and which direction they're going. But yeah, the years, I mean, based on what we saw this year and just given his whole history heading into his 30s, that's really concerning. I wouldn't want to tie myself to Derrick Rose for 4 years, but I would hope ultimately that if it came down to, do we keep Tyus Jones or Derrick Rose, that you keep the, you know, 22-year-old point guard who was. Yeah, I mean, even though, you know, like, he's not the biggest dude in the world, but, you know, he knows what he's doing. And his assist-to-turnover numbers are just insane. So just having a point guard out there who knows how to run an offense and doesn't make mistakes, even if he's not flashy, is just huge. And, you know, where it gives you in a game.
Yeah, for sure. And so would he be the free agent, I think, of their group that you would most want the Timberwolves to bring back?
I would think so. I just don't know, you know, how much you pay him at this point, because they've kind of really put themselves in a tough position with the Gorgie Jang deal, the Wiggins deal, and, you know, of course, Teague opting in, which, you know, it wasn't a surprise to anybody.
Is he worth his cap hold is $7.3 million. He's a restricted free agent. I would think that he's actually worth less than that, would be my guess. I guess he's young. But I don't know where I don't know where his market outside of Minnesota is coming from for something that's more than that.
That's the thing. I mean, someone like Phoenix, who desperately needs a point guard, Orlando. Those are a couple teams that would stand out. Who
Phoenix maybe? You know, I thought Orlando. Maybe Orlando. I guess still Orlando. They have Fultz, but some people don't even think he's going to play again. So
they're still starting DJ Augustine.
Yeah. So, hey, hero maybe they should get another point guard. Game one versus the Raptors, DJ Augustine.
Veteran experience.
So as we sort of just alluded to, without them making any major salary dumps, they're going to have probably the non-taxpayer MLE as their best off-season chip. That's worth a little bit over $9.2 million. Are there any free agents you'd like to see them target with that, or, you know, obviously divvy up amongst multiple free agents? Do any names spring to mind for you?
I know, honestly, I haven't even looked who is going to be a free agent this summer.
Basically half the league. So I feel like if you could name pretty much any name, and there's
all the 2016 deals coming off the books.
Yeah. I thought someone who would be interesting is I think they still need 3-and-D wings. That's I think every team needs that, but they are still they have wings who can do one or the other, and then they have Covington, who's actually 3-and-D. One of the names, and it might be a little over aggressive because he's a restricted free agent, but Dorian Finney-Smith.
Kevin Durant.
Oh yeah. Well.
Oh
yeah.
No. Sorry.
You know what? Look, Kevin Durant's fantastic. And he's just so cranky all the time, it seems. And I don't think you guys want that energy. Not around Kat right now. He just got rid of Jimmy Butler.
He got rid of one crank, you're right.
Kevin Durant's only going to bring down the Minnesota Timberwolves, is basically my take. One sort of name that sprang to mind would be Dorian Finney-Smith, because if Dallas really wants to get Max Rumor sign a big-time name, he might need to become a cap casualty, even though his hold is nothing. So he's restricted, but I don't know. I wouldn't pay him $9.2-$9.3 million anyway. So I would think that he might be one of those names that's gettable. And he's really portable on the defensive end in the half court. And he hit enough of his catch and shoot threes. I think it was around 35% this year to at least come close to fulfilling that 3-and-D wing potential. So that was a name that sort of stuck out. But you could obviously go through just the list of wings. I think what they might run into a problem is when we're talking about veterans along the lines of, you know, Danny Green or Damari Carroll, they're probably going to want to play four teams that are closer to contending for a title.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at the list of, you know, possible free agents this summer, and there are a lot of mistakes to be made out here if you're not careful.
Wow, the Marcus Morris slander that you're just hinting at is out of control right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's Enes Kanter, Valanciunas. Oh man, Terrence Ross is out there.
Terrence Ross's next deal is going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun.
But maybe they could get like a, you know, Cleveland might not be able to afford to keep David Nwaba. That's someone who's smaller and didn't really shoot threes well this year, but he's actually on second thought. I'm talking myself out of it fit wise. He's too much just defense. But I think they could get someone, and maybe the benefit of their cap situation is that they can't go out and just offer a terrible contract, because even if you throw the full boat at Dorian Finney-Smith, like, you know, sub 8 figures per year doesn't put you in a hole.
It's not a big boat to be that's for sure. And like Reggie Bullock's out there, and like Reggie Bullock isn't, you know, like a huge name, but like, you know, he's a guy.
That's a good one.
Kelly Oubre, you're probably not going to get, because he's also restricted, and
he really can't shoot. I think the ship, as we continue to use these nautical references, the ship has sailed on his outside jumper for me.
Yeah, I just, you know, like I watch him sometimes, and I'm like, oh, there's so much to like here, and then you look at like the whole picture, like, oh well.
I mean, like, if you KCP, don't have Tyus or Derrick Rose, and you're just out on T, you could probably run Kelly Oubre Jr. as just a pseudo point guard at points, and that might be an interesting role. But you don't want to. I don't know that you necessarily want to pay for that. I'd rather pay Tyus Jones than Kelly Oubre.
I would, you know, I'd rather them, I think, just, you know, really look towards the draft to fill those spots as much as possible. Then, you know, because I mean, the reality for agency is you're going to overpay anyway, and to get people to come to Minnesota at this point, you're probably going to overpay them even a little more than that. So ideally, yeah, they don't go too crazy in free agency. If something good comes up, great. I mean, like, but even like Wayne Ellington last year, I mean, he got, you know, $8.5 million. Like, that's, you know, that's just kind of the reality of the market for those kind of players. Because like you said, everyone wants 3-and-D players, wings.
They might be, and it depends on which free agents would be willing to sign these types of deals. But if they could get someone for, you know, on a small, like if it's a 2-year deal or something, or a 1-year deal, like maybe it's, you know, we're not even talking mid-level money at this point, but maybe like a Garrett Temple might just be just a solid fit for a year placeholder until they figure out how close they are to the playoffs or something like that.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. Or kind of like what the Sixers have done with like James Ennis. You know, just watching him, it's like, he's not really a great player, but you know, he plays hard, you know, he has the size, you know, he can do some things, even though he's not moving the needle for you. If you need a guy just to eat up minutes and not be atrocious, I mean, you know, someone like that, I think, could also be another deal. Yeah, that's not the worst move in the world.
And have you, you know, since you mentioned the draft, is there, assuming, I'm just going to assume they don't win the lottery. I mean, it's possible that they end up with Zion, but are there any, if they end up in that number 10 spot, have any, like, prospects stuck out for you there that you'd like to maybe see them go after? They're probably in that weird spot where a lot of people consider the draft top heavy, and so if you're at number 10, like, maybe you can justify making a reach or a gamble in years where you otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, and that's
Porter is maybe what I'm getting at, but
right. And yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the thing, like, you know, you never know who's just gonna slide down there. I don't think like the Nuggets expected him to Michael Porter Jr. to be there.
Yeah.
Whether, let's see. Yeah, but if they can find, you know, a guy like they did with Josh Okogie last year, who's just an incredibly useful player, played hard, knew what to do. He doesn't have that outside shot. And I think, you know, they should hopefully try to find a guy like that. But finding that in at number 10 is going to be tough. Yeah, Jared Culver is the guy that I've seen in a lot of mocks for them right around there. But I don't watch a ton of college basketball, but so I think thinking, you know, probably wing or backcourt, you know, is probably fine because they're going to have Cat, they're going to have Gorgie, and, you know, if they lose Taj, I mean, that's obviously going to create an opening, but, you know, there are ways to work around that, especially if, you know, they can get creative, like we saw the Rockets do, you know, now that they have Rosas, and be able to, you know, find those diamonds in the rough after the draft.
You mentioned Dario Saric. Do you think, will he be like their starting power forward next year, even if Taj is back? Do you think that maybe there's a chance that he gets an extension? Do they even view him as a core piece, or is he just sort of in limbo and they're still trying to figure out what they have in him?
Well, I think they do like Saric. You know, he eventually, you know, wound up taking Taj's spot in the lineup. But that's the thing. Like, I don't think we really know what he is. I'm going to make this comparison, not just because they're European players, but it reminds me a lot about the things that we said about Nemanja Bjelica when he was here. It just being so frustrated that he is, you know, he's just so inconsistent, and you just never really know what you're going to get from him on a nightly basis. And the passing up the threes and things like that, where I don't think they really know exactly what he is yet. And if, you know, we know what Covington is, but Covington's 28 years old. So you're still going to get a few more good years out of him. But a guy like Saric, you should be able to hopefully develop and still get more out of. But it's kind of frustrating that after 50, 60 games of Saric last year, you don't know exactly what you have for him down the road. Maybe he just winds up being, you know, a nice bench piece and, you know, on a really good team, and that's fine. But I think, you know, continuing to get some way to figure out what they have in him and, you know, where he fits in the grand scheme of things will also definitely be important.
And his shot seemed to come around just towards the latter part of last year. Definitely, I know there's a lot of late season noise when you're looking at March and onward, but definitely from March 1st, I think he shot almost 38% from three. But there's always just been questions, I think dating back to his time in Philly, where he wasn't necessarily asked to do much. Is he ever going to be the guy that can just consistently create for himself, you know, more than straight line drives, maybe taking some off the dribble jumpers, running some pick and rolls? And that, Minnesota would have room, I think, to dabble with that. But at the same time, he hasn't shown anything in those departments. And it's, maybe it was a matter of opportunity with Philly to some extent, but it's really tough to invest in a guy like that, where I think we can believe that, yeah, he's going to be a really good set shooter, but what is he going to give you beyond that and beyond frontline spacing at the four spot?
Yeah, exactly. And that was one thing that, you know, with Bjelica, you know, you watch his European highlights and, you know, he was able to put the ball on the ground and he could do so many things. And you just saw this dynamic player, and then you see him in the NBA and you're just like, what isn't happening here? And, you know, you just think like the Wolves could still, you know, use a player like that in charge. But I'm looking at it now, and for his career, he's had 97% of his career 3-pointers assisted on.
Right.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but like we're talking about having, you know, someone who can bend a defense on their own. And not just with their gravity and just, you know, their presence, but someone who can actively, you know, make a defense react to them. And that's just not really been Saric at this point, just because he does rely so much on, you know, facilitators around him rather than being one of those playmakers himself.
If I could be one Timberwolves player for a day, like on the basketball court, I'm pretty sure it'd be Josh Okogie, just because he plays with such a plum, and he's a really tough one-on-one defender. What are you looking, realistically, even expecting for him to do on the offensive end to just become more of a consistent asset? I do think it's easy to say, well, hit more jumpers, and, you know, that's, I think that's obviously accurate, but I do wonder if that, like, that's a really, like, a wholesale thing to improve. Like, not all players just develop these jumpers, and so I'm wondering if you, there's any aspect of his offensive game that you looked at, whether it was his willingness to attack the rim, maybe if he can move off the ball, that you saw or would hint at him being more of a plus offensive asset next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime that, I mean, he just has such a high motor. I mean, I watch Josh Okogie and I go, this is the player we wanted Shabazz Muhammad to be for 4 or 5 years. And, you know, that was just really, like, the funny thing. He's the Shabazz Muhammad has that same energy, only he doesn't know what to do with it. And it led to a lot of mistakes and things like that. But Okogie, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to control it a little better. I would just want to see him continue to be active and, you know, maybe even, you know, become the better screen setter and pick and rolls and things like that. Just
ooh,
ways,
that'd be interesting.
He has decent size. I mean, and as a role man with his energy, you know, I think that could be interesting to see if he could pursue that. I mean, obviously you want to see him become a better shooter. But how many guys coming out nowadays would you say need to be a better shooter? Probably most of them.
It's like, I was talking about this in our previous pod where it's like, we can say, like, imagine what Ben Simmons would be like if he had a pull-up three-pointer. But, like, that's a huge thing to just pencil in as a what if. Like, players don't just always develop those types of skills.
No, and I think they're, you know, I think we do over, we do tend to, if a player doesn't have the shot, I think we tend to overplay that and underplay the strengths that they do have. Because, you know, you look at a guy like Ben Simmons, it's like, yeah, he can't shoot, but he can get to the rim like it's no problem and, you know, flip a shot over anybody. So does it really matter that much? No, the Sixers are still a very good team. And with Okogie, it's like, you know, you see that he can get into the lane at will. He's a monster in transition. He makes plays on defense, you know, and gets out on the break. Like, there are so many things that he does well that you're like, well, you can live with him not having a shot in a certain role. And, of course, it depends, you know, on having guys around you. Maybe we'd feel differently about Simmons if he didn't have J.J. Redick or if Joel Embiid couldn't hit, you know, an outside shot. So, I mean, the roster construction matters. But I think there are definitely other ways to get guys involved rather than, you know, just saying, oh, well, they need to be a 38% three-point shooter, even though that is incredibly helpful.
Two things on him. I always just feel like, and maybe it's because he plays bigger than he actually is on defense, I forget that he's only 6'4". And two, he has one of the low-key best Twitter handles in the NBA, at @callme_nonstop. I really admire that handle for some reason.
Oh, yeah, no, it's good. And then I think he works his jersey number in there, too, which is even better.
Look, even better there. This is more of a loaded question because there's, you know, we just talked about maybe stuff could happen in free agency. We don't know what the roster is going to look like. Who are they going to bring back? But Kata Bates-Diop played more toward the end of last year when the Wolves' season was kind of over. From what I saw of him late in the season, which I can guarantee, obviously, was far less than you, he seems to be a very self-aware off-ball defender, very strong on the inside. What do you think he also needs to do to be more of an offensive asset? And I know the jump shot is there as well. And do you think that he ends up having more of a consistent role with the Timberwolves next year, or is his involvement with them very much dependent on the personnel that they do or don't get on the open market?
Oh man, yeah, all the above. I do think that they, you know, he does have he most likely does have a bigger role next season. Tom Thibodeau has never been big on playing, you know, a lot of guys. I mean, I don't even want to say young players, because Anthony Tolliver struggled to see the floor at times, and he was playing, you know, 8 or 9 guys in November, and it's like, well, that just November, December, and that just doesn't work either. But what I see with Jop, kind of a lot along the same lines that you said, you know, he makes responsible plays. He doesn't try to do too much. He doesn't seem to have any, you know, delusions of grandeur as far as who he is as a player. He won't try to do too much. He won't hurt you. He doesn't seem to be, you know, this. I mean, he came out, I think, as a 3 or 4 year player. So, I mean, those guys typically don't have as much upside as younger mm-hmm. players. Yeah, he's already 23 years old. But there's still going to be some room to grow there. And I mean, his rookie season basically started after the new year. So there, I think there's still a lot there to be seen. But I think he should definitely be with the big club and not going back and forth between the Timberwolves and Iowa Wolves.
I picked your brain about Andrew Wiggins a lot on the last podcast, and I think both of us ended up where we were still holding out hope for him. It was at the beginning of last year, I think, at the beginning of the season or around midseason when you came on. Where do you sort of land on him now? And we have two questions from listeners tied to Wiggins. One from Sports and Jokes at Sports and Jokes One. Is it just time to wave the white flag on Wiggins? And then Beater Griffin at Beater NBA Fan. Are there any teams you could see that would want to take a chance on him? Or you, just covering it from the Timberwolves perspective, are there any contracts out there that you think might be a good fit for a trade? You know, those unsavory deals that you'd be willing to take back to get rid of Wiggins?
Oh, it's just so bad. Yeah,
he has 4 years and $122.2 million left on his contract. That's the balance. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
And you know, people were, you know, some Wolves fans got on my case, you know, late last season, like, well, he's done this over the last 5 games. And I'm like, I don't really care about the last 5 games. I just don't. I look at what, and people go, well, you know, when he played with Ricky, he was this good. Well, like, he should be able to play with more than one NBA point guard. He shouldn't only get fired up for these certain games.
For
like
the Thunder, yeah.
Yeah, or when the Cavaliers come to town. You know, he should be fired up to play, you know, just about every single night. If he has a bad night or an off night where he's not feeling it, so be it. But that's just like, you know, how it is with Kat. Like, he shows up every night and gives you 20 and 10. And so that night when he does have 11 and 4, like, you're like, yeah, all right. Well, he had a bad game. What are you going to do? But this is like, you know, an every night thing. And we've seen this regression each year for the last several years at this point. And it's not just the shooting. It's not just the defense. It's the overall inefficiency where, you know, Wiggins was getting to the line as, you know, top 10 in the league his first couple of years. And let's see, his free throw rate was at 43.7 in his second year. Third year drops to 34.5 and then 24 each of the last 2 years. So he's just not getting to the line anymore either. And, you know, like James Harden, you know, when he has a bad shooting night, but he's still getting to the line. And so, you know, right. You're like, how did he get 43 points on 37 shots? Well, because he got to the free throw line 20 times, or took 20 free throws rather. And Wiggins just doesn't have that component to his game. So it just looks like he's not doing anything out there. And then you just don't notice him. And you know, I really hate to be having this conversation still in year six, as you know, how you get him going and, oh, maybe someone else can, you know, finally fix him. But the problem is, like, all these teams that people had floated in the past, like the Hawks and the Kings, you know, as possible destinations, like, they don't need Andrew Wiggins. You know, I mean, maybe you take Kent Bazemore, you know, for Andrew Wiggins just to get him out there. But why would the Hawks do that? Why would they want to pay him for 4 more years, even if you give them a first? When they have, you know, Trae Young and John Collins and Kevin Huerter and whoever they add in this year. The Kings are on the way up and they don't need Andrew Wiggins. I mean, plus they already have Harrison Barnes. Like, they don't need Andrew Wiggins. So it's like, what do you do with him? You're almost in this position where you have to make him work, you know, one way or the other. And I mean, I do think it sends kind of a bad message too. If you're like, well, you know, we evaluated this guy, we determined he was worth the max and we were wrong. And then we had to, you know, pay out more assets to get rid of him. That's not, that doesn't reflect well on you and, you know, for the rest of the league. So I think it's important to try to get something out of it and at least elevate that value so that maybe you can trade it. But even a guy like Gorgui Dieng, who, you know, only makes, you know, he's still owed $34 million over the next 2 years and he's a serviceable NBA big man. And they can't move him without possibly attaching a draft pick. So, yeah, it's not a good spot to be in with Andrew Wiggins unless he just improves on his own.
Yeah, and I'm normally in this situation, I might be more pro of like going, traveling the great lengths it would take to dump him, but there's just, I can't even fathom what those lengths would be at this point, because with 4 years left on his deal, there are not a lot of contracts, if there are any, that are even close to as ugly looking as his right now. And so, like, you know,
John Wall?
Yeah, and it's a, but like, wouldn't you rather have John Wall, his 4 year price point, than Wiggins? Yes, he's more money, but he's John Wall. It's the same with healthy, Russell Westbrook. Yeah. So it's,
yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, and, you know, we had Eric Dahlberg at Eric CD25. Next, if the Hornets would go for a sign and trade of Kemba for Wiggins, if the Timberwolves were sending more pieces. I could not come up with, sign and trades are so rare, but it's just, even if we were talking about Batum.
I don't think
you
can do them anymore.
Yeah. It's, even if we were talking about Batum, like, you want Batum's deal probably instead of Wiggins's at this point.
Yeah.
So I think that the argument you made was interesting. At this point, it's you either try and build back up his value to where he can be moved, even if it takes, you know, a sweetener or two, but at least you know that there's a price tag involved to dumping him. Or maybe you get lucky. Maybe he starts, you know, Jimmy Butler's not there to start the season. Maybe his offensive role just gets more consistent where he's not being, you know, poo-pooed between all these different capacities, and maybe something just clicks. That's probably I think, as you said, the way you outlined it, I really think is just the only course of action for them right now.
Yeah, and I just don't know how else you fix it unless you're going to, you know, include him in like an eventual Towns trade or something. Because, you know,
imagine using
like,
Karl Anthony Towns to dump Andrew Wiggins' contract. That would be something.
I don't know what else you would attach to it.
No, it's like it's a more drastic measure of the Knicks using Kristaps Porzingis to get off Tim Hardaway's money, basically.
Yeah, because Towns actually plays.
Yes, he does, and he is way better than Kristaps Porzingis. Robert Covington misses a good chunk of time last year, but he played. I think he really did change the defensive tenets for the Timberwolves when he first arrived. Do you think that he's considered, you know, maybe they have three core pieces in Cat, Rocco, and Okogie, or is he not necessarily on that level? Because he's just in this weird age group. His contract is fantastic if he's going to be healthy, but if the Timberwolves do decide to lean into just something a little bit more gradual, having, yes, you know, his contract is great, but he's a guy who's going to help you win games, and how much value is there in carrying a 28-year-old, going to be 29 in December, Robert Covington on the books, if you do rebuild, which, you know, you said that the Timberwolves aren't looking to do.
Yeah, I think what you talked about, you know, was something that was really cool with when Covington came over. Him and Sharge really had this immediate chemistry on the defensive end. And I think, you know, you look at, like, everything that we talked about, like, with Jimmy Butler when he was acquired was, oh, yeah, you know, he's going to come in. He's going to be, you know, this voice on the floor. He's going to help, you know, put these guys in the right places. And that just obviously never happened because that's not who he is. Whereas it really seems like Robert Covington was that guy. And as far as, you know, like his future role, like he's a 28-year-old guy, you know, he's making $11 million a year, which is a great contract to have. But, I think for the time being, he can be kind of that placeholder, second, third banana on this team. You know, that kind of sort of just keeps everything together because there is value in, you know, having a guy around who can, you know, he can get stops. He can, you know, hit threes. He's a very willing three-point shooter. And I think when you have someone like, you know, Rosas running the team and, you know, Ryan Saunders, who's young and, you know, very open-minded, he could definitely be a weapon. Even if, you know, maybe when this team reaches its full apex, hopefully, he may no longer quite, he might be more of like an Andre Iguodala role rather than a lesser Andre Iguodala than, you know, the definite number two piece on a playoff team or Western Conference Finals team, you know?
Look, I'm going to be honest. See, he has 3 years and $36.4 million left on his deal, and just the type of player that he is and how well he thrives in a team defensive setting, if he's mm-hmm. healthy, if the right knee isn't a problem, they wouldn't be top selections. I would give up two first-round picks for Robert Covington. Like, just mid-level picks.
I think
you'd
take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's – so – and that would be just the value I'm keeping. I'm not saying for just trade value, but I like that's how good he is. And he doesn't necessarily fit whatever timeline the Timberwolves travel, but whatever iteration or whatever version of a team they throw out there, he is just very much plug and play with his style.
Oh gosh. I mean, just about anywhere. I mean, who can't use an extra wing defender? Who can't use an extra knockdown shooter? I mean, yeah,
right. It's like, you know what? He can't really dribble. I don't care. Like the way he defends, and you don't want, when you have other high usage guys around him, that it just, it, he doesn't, there's so much value in fit, that he will fit whatever version of the Timberwolves there is. And so I wouldn't hesitate if I was an outside team. I think it would take, if I were the Timberwolves, at 2 first-round picks before I even consider rerouting him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And if they could get that, awesome. And I think a lot of teams will look at that, you know, maybe down the road, especially maybe if the Wolves are just kind of, you know, having another middling season where they're in it, but they're not really in it. You know, maybe they do look at the option of possibly, you know, trading him at the deadline for something. I mean, it's not a bad, he's not a bad piece to have either for trade or for keeping either. So yeah, no, it's definitely great to have him one way or the other.
Karl Anthony Towns. We went long without mentioning him. I think because I just don't know that there's more to say about him. He's just, he's one of the most dominant offensive players in the game. One of the most dominant offensive big men of all time. He made a lot of headway as a defender in set situations. And I've read the coverage just from the Timberwolves is that Robert Covington and Dario Saric being around and the Timberwolves were switching a little bit more, that helped Towns a lot. Do you think that there's a chance he ends up being this defender who can make more complicated reads in the half court, more, you know, successfully make more complicated closeouts, or has the ship sailed on Karl-Anthony Towns, the very much above average defender? And if you're going to get close to league average defense from him, you should just consider yourself fortunate.
Yeah. I mean, if he, you know, of course, you know, stays at league average, that's obviously very good. But I just think, you know, to a lot of, like what Sam Mitchell, you know, was talking about when he was coaching Towns in his rookie year, you know, he's talking about these guys now that come out and they, you know, year four, they would just be graduating from college, where 20 years ago, you know, they would be rookies, but now they're 4-year veterans. And I think we see over and over again with big men that it's not uncommon for it to take them until age 27, 28, 29 to reach their peak, you know, as far as defensive competency. And so I would not be surprised. I mean, especially as Towns continues to mature physically and his basketball knowledge and get better. I mean, there's still definitely room there. How far it goes, though, is really up to him.
The thing that still takes me aback about his offensive game that probably shouldn't, but when he like fakes out of threes and just dribbles into the lane, it is absolutely terrifying. It's like Al Horford on nitrous oxide watching him do it. And I just,
it's so perfect that you mentioned Horford for with Towns too.
And so it's just, it's the fact that a big man can move like that, because he's so much more, he has like in on those plays specifically, that just the Al Horford motion and IQ, but just the explosion, and yet it's combined with the finesse. I don't, it's still just when he does it, I could see why defenders would bite, because I just don't look at him and think that that's what's about to happen. And again, he's going into year five of his career. So that's just something I still appreciate, but somehow still catches me off guard when I'm watching him.
Well, and everyone bites on it too. That's the most amazing thing. I mean, over and over again, you know, when you, well, cause you know, he can shoot it too. And I mean, that's part of the value in being able to hit 38, 40% of your 3-pointers is teams also have to respect that, but they also see that they have to respect your dribble. And you see, once he gets that step, I mean, it's too late at that point. And yeah, it's impressive to see just how many things he can do on that end.
Yeah, he's, I mean, his shooting, like you said, off the charts at 40%, and I think he was more accurate off the catch last year. Yeah, 41.1% on catch and shoot three. So this is, he is still someone I could see, I don't want to use the word late bloomer, but it's like how Damian Lillard has only really just been accepted as a top 10 player over the last year or two. Towns can still get there, and I don't think that that's talked about enough. He's that, if he didn't improve a lick on defense, there's still a chance that he would get there, because he's just so damn good at the offensive end. And this is, I would, if I had to guess, I would think within the next, if it's not next season, maybe the season after that, that's when we're really just talking about Towns as that top 10 mainstay.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no question. I think a lot of times too, we're a little harsh on these guys. I remember Towns' second, third year when, you know, he was having, you know, the really his most defensive, worst defensive struggles. and everyone's like, oh, Carl Anthony Kanter and things like that. And it's like, these guys, I mean, they take longer to, you know, come around, I think, than we remember. Because everything is, you know, I mean, with Twitter, you can get highlights constantly, and, you know, we have all the access to the conversation and things like that, that we forget that it takes these guys, you know, time to come around. And I mean, with Towns, I don't know that I fully expected him to be able to do this, but I do remember, I might've said this last time too, but it was the last time that I talked to Flip Saunders, and it was on Towns' draft night. And I asked Flip, he was talking about how he can do this, how, you know, he can do that. And I was like, well, what can't he do right now? What does he need to focus on most? And Flip goes, there's nothing he can't do. And it's like, we're kind of
no pressure,
seeing
though.
That. I mean, he's getting better as a passer. I mean, I think he's gotten better at recognizing double teams, passing out of those, which is also huge. He can dribble. He can consistently hit that outside shot at an elite level as a 7-footer. I mean, I think the world still is this guy's oyster.
You mentioned the pressure is interesting because Zion Williamson is just the latest where they're talking about him as the best college prospect since Anthony Davis, and the biggest marketing boon for a rookie since LeBron James. And I'll never forget, I don't remember when exactly it was for Towns. I'm not sure if it was his first career game, but David Thorpe, who is a fantastic basketball analyst now over at True Hoop. I love listening to him on podcasts and reading him stuff. But I remember he tweeted, I have seen enough of Carl Anthony Towns to know that he has more upside than Anthony Davis. Again, I don't know what game number that was for his career, but he was a rookie. That's just to saddle players from the outside with such expectations. I do think that colors the way we end up viewing them when they don't immediately or ever hit that apex.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that plays into it. And it's not the player's fault, but it does, you know, reflect our expectations for it. Like if Anthony Bennett had been, you know, the 27th pick, we would not have cared, you know, if he washed out of the league in 2 or 3 years. The fact that he held on that long would probably be impressive enough. And arguably the only reason he did was that, well, he was a first round pick. So, you know, we have to keep him around. It's like, no, you don't. He's not good. So I think similarly, you know, that it definitely does add those expectations, you know, fair or unfair.
My final question for you, and I will thank you once again for letting me take up so much of your time. Who is the player that's most likely to be traded by them this offseason? And this is one of those generic questions I ask for all of these exit interview pods. But for the Timberwolves, I find it legitimately interesting because it's either a topic or like a nod towards, hey, let's talk about Jeff Teague, or I really just can't decide who it would be.
Well, who's still trade eligible at this point? That's a thing. I mean, Sharitz, Bates, Job, Towns, Wiggins, Gorgie Jang. I mean, they're losing so many guys that.
Yeah, and it's two of the guys that can be traded, Wiggins and Jang, you need. I would say Wiggins is as close to a movable as there is in the NBA right now, although maybe because he's so young. I honestly, we can't go back down that rabbit hole. But and then Jang, you would need to, with 2 years left on his deal, you would definitely need to attach something to it.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's worth it. I mean, he fell out of the rotation for a good chunk of last year and eventually found his way back and showed that, you know, he still can do some things. But that's kind of the problem with Gorgie, is that he's so inconsistent, even if he's rather reliable. He doesn't miss a lot of games, but he's definitely an up-and-down player. Yeah, maybe Gorgie. I mean, everything that they have left is so tough. I mean, I guess I'd probably say... Gosh, I mean, I've tried to talk myself into the Suns or Magic or someone trading for Teague, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe even Detroit, if they were going to send back not Reggie Jackson, but like one of their cheaper, you know, like a Galloway and War, and then just a second round pick, just so that the Timberwolves could diminish their payroll. But if you have immediate expectations, Teague is. I think it was. How did you put it last year? I think it was like just fine or something like that, or almost fine. That's what's just going to go on Teague's tombstone was. Almost fine, like Jeff.
He's fine.
Almost fine, Jeff Teague.
That's really exactly how it is.
He would be my pick, though. With that, is he your pick as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think realistically, he's probably the one guy that you don't have to give something else up. I mean, that he's still a useful, productive NBA player. When he's at his best, he's a pretty average, you know, to the what, top 15, top 20 point guard in the NBA? So, I mean, that's kind of worth it if you can find a way to get that, although I don't know if you're entirely going to get that with Teague.
And this, I would think with any trade for them, because they're not, the measures they'd have to go to create actual cap space are just so stark, and two, cap space doesn't mean to a team in Minnesota what it would to a team in LA, that they probably wouldn't look at, my guess, but please do correct me, that they probably won't look at anything, I guess, until midseason when they sort of have a better feel for who they are, or I guess they could be one of those teams that are trying to make those, you know, net positive acquisitions to beef up their playoff chances, and that's what would prompt them to make a move over the offseason. But otherwise, I don't really see them being one of those squads that's active on the trade front until the season's already underway.
Yeah, and I don't know that it makes sense to, you know, max out your payroll and push towards a luxury tax line for another, you know, 38, 40, 42 win team. I don't think that makes a ton of sense.
No,
especially when we saw in the West that it, you know, took almost 50 games again to get a playoff spot, 45, 50 games. So I don't think they're quite there. Shedding salary would be nice, but, you know, honestly, sometimes the best decision is just to let your mistakes play themselves out.
Well, Derek, I once again appreciate you coming on. This was a lot of fun. Always appreciate you dropping your Timberwolves insight. If you guys are not following Derek, again, you need to correct that immediately. He can be found at Derek James NBA. I don't even need to spell it out. That's why you need to follow him, because it's just so easy to remember. He covers the Minnesota Timberwolves for Score North and Canis Hoopus. He also covers the Minnesota Lynx for High Post Hoops. Be sure to check them out if you haven't done so already. I will definitely be pestering you again at some point, I'm sure. So thanks again for coming on and giving me an hour of your time. And until next time, I leave everybody with the shout out to Kyle Anderson.